Amateur Presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
Shield generators have been hit!
I will admit, everyone, I'm sorry, we're a little late on this one. We're only about 25 years late reviewing this one. I'm sorry, we have no excuses. I know you guys have been asking for this one for a while. We are going to officially review today Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Eric, how are you?
Matt, I'm feeling good. And I think a reason why it took so long, he's always betting on Sebulba, doesn't always make the wins, but you know, money's the only thing that works on this gentleman. Watto is joining us in the chat.
Hey, Eric, how you doing, huh? You good, man? Yeah, it's good to see you, eh? You look good, man. Yeah, you look good.
I mean, unfortunately, we're not talking about Attack of the Clones with Watto and his little hat.
Amazing hat. Yeah, yeah. So,
but it's good to talk about this because
I think we can go full spoilers on this one, right?
I think so, yes. I believe so. And I also feel that this will be a bit of a therapy session for me because this is tied to childhood trauma. But it was exciting to watch this movie so it was for my brother's birthday. He had a group of friends and we all kind of went to go and see this at the Scotiabank Theater in Toronto. And
turning 25, he was born during a screening of Phantom Menace, right?
Sure. Now, I don't think that works, but let's go along with it. So there's a lot there to unpack just in terms of like this movie being tied partly to nostalgia, but then also feeling like, okay, there's like a melancholy to it that's personal.
You've told this story, but
I have. Yeah. Yeah. Literally, I'll do the abbreviated version. The week that this was coming out, my parents were already separating, and me and my two brothers, Connor and Kyle, we were supposed to be at our dad's that weekend, and he was going to take us to The Phantom Menace. It was really exciting. Like, I was full on a huge Star Wars fan at that point, I knew every character's name. I had the encyclopedias. I just was obsessed with Star Wars. So it was a big deal. And it was tough with what was going on with, you know, divorces never, you know, as amicable as it can be, it still is not easy, especially for kids. So I was 11 at this point. And when my dad was supposedly taking us to go see the movie, he drove to my mom in his place. And now my mom was living there. He had moved out because he had an affair with my future stepmother. And so what you had here was a man that was jealous of my mother moving on and telling him, no, that just wasn't going to happen anymore. And we're done. And so he was in a fit of rage and he went to try to get into the house. And my stepdad was there at the time. And so they kept the door locked, called the police. But all three of us were freaking out. I was the only one that got out of his car and ran to try to get into the house. But then my dad grabbed me by the hand and pulled me all the way from the door into the backyard, trying to get in, shouting and yelling some pretty horrible things that you'd expect someone that was jealous and upset and, you know, specifically derogatory towards women would say. And so from there, the police were called. They come and the whole thing is disbanded. And I'm wearing this like, you know, blanket that they wear when they put over you after you've been in like a disaster movie.
Those like silver, like tinfoil blankets or whatever.
Yeah. Cause I'm in shock at this point. Like, sure. So what happened also just quickly, I was able to get away from him. And as soon as I did, there was enough time for me to get back to the door And then my stepdad unlocked it and my mom pulled me in. And I said to the police, like, I don't want to go back with him. So my brothers ended up going with him for the rest of the weekend, probably just as traumatized. And I ended up going to my grandparents, who lived at that point in Scarborough. And I had like literally the week off of school. And the next day, my Nana took me to see episode one at the Scarborough Town Center. And I was literally crying throughout the entire movie. And I'll always, and then from that point, you know, my relationship with my father has never been the same. And, you know, we're more so friends now than we are, you know, family. But then, you know, 2 years went by when I didn't see him. And when I started to, there were social workers there. So, you know, like it's one of those things where everybody has their own trauma or their own sort of tribulations to go through in life. And, you know, it obviously could have been so much worse, but when you're, you know, 10 or 11 years old and, you know, you're seeing your parents separate and you feel like the world is kind of ending because like your world is like a family unit. And sure. At that point, divorce, while it was becoming a little bit more common, it was still like, oh, did, you know, and you, the first thing you do as a kid, you blame yourself because you just think like, oh, it's because of me that I did it, because it's how you see things. But yeah, it's such a fascinating experience to have watching it now, because it was,
I appreciate you sharing that. That was very open. You didn't have to be that open, but I mean,
I've talked about it so much to a lot of people,
like,
and it's just like
kind of this weird dark joke about this movie, right? Like you, every time you think of this movie, you bring up that story and it just let everyone knows that it doesn't bother you anymore. But no. When you tell it to new people, everyone's like, oh, okay, holy fuck. Okay.
Yeah. So this whole thing, it's like it has this weird connection that will always be like a part of my life in some way. Like Star Wars will always be a part of my life, like it was in a positive way.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but like in terms of this film, like
specific movie.
Yeah, because like even if you're just looking at it from the point of view of not being that personal, you know, this movie was a big deal for us because like the marketing was so It was everywhere. It was ubiquitous, right?
So this is new. This is a Coke Zero can, but you see how they have Captain America on here for
No Red Hulk, huh?
I mean, maybe Red Hulk is on another can or just Hulk, but this reminded me of, remember those episode one Pepsi cans? But the Pepsi cans had like Watto or whatever on the side, and then they had like stats for the person and would have their name and stuff like that. But it was gigantic, man. Like I. Not a similar story, but like it is one of those movies that I think you remember even at our young age of like, I was 10, you would have been 11, right?
Yeah.
I remember like it's one of the theatrical experiences as a kid. Like I remember that night going to see it, right? Like there's not many. And I know like 11 years old, you're still going to have a ton of memories from then. It's not like, and I have a shit memory anyway, but I remember being at a cottage with like all of my family and me like forcing everyone to go like opening weekend being like, please, can we go see episode one? Like, and us driving to some small town movie theater. I don't even know the town, I forget, but then my whole family, like not, this is before advance tickets and everything like that, just buying tickets the night of. And because it was a small town, they still had tickets left and we got there right before showtime and we all had to sit in like the very front row.
Oh God, with your neck.
Yeah, like as a 10-year-old, but it was still like, you know, as a 10-year-old, this movie to me still kicked ass as a 10-year-old. But as you got older, and we'll talk about it here, you realize some of its flaws a little bit more. But yeah, so I think it is one of those movies. I mean, yours, obviously a big moment in your life. So that's why it's always attached to that. But I think like it was a huge deal, right? Like,
yeah. Well, you remember the marketing, like you're aware that it's being marketed to you. Like you remember that first teaser poster of Jake Lloyd and the shadow of Vader behind him in Tatooine. You mentioned, you know, the pop cans, but even like the toys with the chip reader and you know, all of these new characters that people were excited to potentially discover, in the way that, you know, when your parents went to go see the original films, they fell in love with someone like Yoda when they saw Empire Strikes Back. Was Jar Jar Binks going to be the Yoda of this new franchise? Was Watto going to be, you know, our next great character? And, you know, for the most part, it was one of the most disappointing experiences in a personal and sort of
movie going. Were you disappointed even back then? Like as a
kid? I think I was, just because I was so in love with those original films, that there were parts of it that I really still enjoyed. And like, there were like Darth Maul is basically the Boba Fett of Phantom Menace, where he's basically just a cool looking character that maybe had some potential, but never really goes anywhere, and it never lives up to anything because they were marketing.
But eventually,
so
does
much
in animation. In animation,
sure, and it just goes by Maul.
It's Maul now.
But yeah,
Dad,
it's not Danny anymore. It's Maul. And so when you're watching something like that, part of you, I think, because we were kids, the movie is still also very much. And this is the problem that this franchise also has, this prequel franchise. It's partly a kids' movie,
but then
and it's meant for kids. But then it has, yeah, and politics and sort of very, you know, dry dialogue. But then once you get
it, wants to have its cake and eat it too, right?
Like, but once you get to Revenge of the Sith, you have Anakin Skywalker being burnt alive, and you're thinking, wait, this
you
is all supposed to be a
kids
movie.
Murdered, right?
Yeah.
Like you have kids being murdered. And
yeah.
Shit like that,
you have a Padme December relationship in this movie, you know? It's so awkward and uncomfortable. And it feels like everything that made those original movies special has been diluted in this. But there are still things about this one that I appreciate more than Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, which I have really no nostalgia for. Like, this movie felt like it was just like even the Taco Bell thing, you know, I've eaten a Taco Bell with you a couple of times because you're an enabler, but outside of that, the last time I had like Taco Bell on a regular basis
was episode one
to collect the toys and the merchandise and all that
Watto puppet at one of them, right, or whatever.
Yeah, almost that feels like a Pizza Hut thing.
Or the
but
Sippy
yeah.
Cup. Yeah, Pizza Hut was the, I think in Casper or some shit. They had the Sippy
Cup. Casper
cups,
and
right?
Flipper.
Yeah, Flipper. Yeah, good stuff.
All the good ones.
Yeah, I mostly agree with you, and we'll get into whatever we think about the movie. But I wanted to, before we go do that, so it was 16 years in between Return of the Jedi and, you know, Phantom Menace, which is crazy to think of because that would mean today, 2008. So that's Dark Knight. That's Iron Man. That's like those types of movies. If you made a sequel to one of those.
Oh, God, no, Matt, stop.
That's no, I'm just saying, like, that's the year Dark Knight, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, Hancock, Mamma Mia. Hancock was the fourth highest grossing movie that year over Iron Man. That's crazy.
Like, well, Will Smith was still a big name at that point.
Iron Man, Wall-E. So like that gap is the same gap now of us in those movies.
No.
Like, that's crazy. And it's weird because 2008 is kind of the time where I first started getting into like film criticism stuff a little bit. And you were even before that, right?
Yeah. Well, I had watched Siskel and Ebert and Ebert and Roper.
So to put it in context for you, it would be like you reviewing Return of the Jedi and then reviewing Phantom Menace. You've been doing it that long between that gap. So anyways, I thought that was funny. My thoughts, I don't hate Phantom Menace. And as a kid, I genuinely loved it because I was a dumb kid, right? Like, I loved the original Star Wars trilogy. I had the VHS box set of the special editions. My uncle Mark was a big Star Wars guy, so he kind of got me into it. And I think he was the one who gave me the VHSs. And I remember being obsessed watching those VHSs. And I have this like vivid image in my brain of kind of like the shitty VHS tape and the glow from the lightsabers. And I remember having Luke's green lightsaber toy and I just absolutely loved it. And so Phantom Menace was a huge deal for me too. And I remember at the time, it wasn't until Attack of the Clones, where it was a couple years later. I was a teenager when that came out, right? It was two years later.
Yeah. And that's where you based all your romance out of.
Yeah, exactly. Great. I remember Attack of the Clones being one of the first movies, along with Spider-Man 3, of being like something I was really excited for. And I was like, oof, that was not good.
That
like
was rough.
Starting to be a little bit more critical, right? Like, yeah. You know, when you're younger and you're a kid, you pretty much like anything, right? Like if it has something cool in it, you're going to be like, that was like the pod racing thing was the coolest fucking thing in the world, right? The Darth Maul fight, the coolest thing in the world. Do both of those things live up as an adult? Absolutely. They're the two best things in the movie. The pod racing sequence, as indulgent as it is, and as like, I don't know if the version we saw in theaters was the one with this super long pod racing scene, but like it did feel like it was. I think it is the same extended, you know, special edition or whatever the hell they want to call it. And then the Duel of the Fates final scene with Darth Maul against Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, I think is genuinely like a really fun lightsaber battle. And like, I think the pauses and the three planes of action don't quite work because you really just want to get back to the Duel of the Fates kind of lightsaber scene. You know, the Padme stuff running around and Anakin in the A-Wing? Is he in an A-Wing? I forget what he's in.
It's Star Wars nerd, yeah. But it's an A-Wing!
Yeah, well, like, I don't know, yeah, which one it is, sorry, but...
I would know it when I was younger, so we could tell you then, but... And then you have the stuff with the Gungans and the droids and...
And all that shit doesn't... Like, all the Gungan stuff, Jar Jar's just as awful as you remember. Like, it's... And it's nothing against Ahmed Best or anything. Like, I think he gets kind of a bad rap for that, and I like how they've kind of given him little things of playing a Jedi in Ahsoka, as well as like him coming back for that kids like game show that they did, as well as, and he's playing the same Jedi that he does in Ahsoka, and then him voicing Darth Jar Jar in the new Lego special, I think is really fun. Like, Misa gonna hurt you, son. And I was like, okay, that's really funny. All in all, like it ebbs and flows. I found myself kind of bored. Like, I was having fun with you guys. I took two edibles before seeing this movie too. And
you had nerd clusters.
Those were not great.
They were as disappointing as Star Wars Episode 1.
So the edibles didn't help. I mean, they started to kick in during the pod racing scene, and that did help. But all in all, like, I like elements of the movie. I like Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon, although like there were some
we got to get into this.
Yeah. So, what was really funny is it was such a different experience, right? Like watching it with a ton of Star Wars fans. It was a sold out show basically at the Scotiabank on a Friday night. So it was kind of wild watching it, because every time you've seen this movie since 99, has been at home, right? Or with a couple friends, or showing it to my wife or whoever. Where watching it with a crowd that was a mix of like gigantic Star Wars nerds and probably people who just came with, right? Like a lot of your brother's friends probably aren't big Star Wars people, but they came for Kyle's birthday and stuff like that. But so some of the unintentionally funny moments of like Qui-Gon just being a misogynist or an asshole.
Worse in terms of like the Jedi mandate of like what you're supposed to be, you know, to help people in the galaxy. Almost, you know, like disciples.
I'm not here
of
to free
Jesus.
Slaves.
And that's the thing. Where like this screening, the biggest takeaway I felt watching it is that Qui-Gon Jinn is actually the true villain. Like the jokes of Jar Jar being, you know, a pseudo Sith or something like that. It's Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon is the one that convinces them to take on Anakin. Qui-Gon is the one that has no interest in freeing the slaves. Qui-Gon is a guy who hits it and quits it with Anakin's mom. It's amazing how awful a person Qui-Gon is. And yet the performance that Liam Neeson gives, I think, is the best in this cast. I think most of these actors, you know, there are a lot of talented people with Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman, and they've done good work outside of these movies. But they're awful in this. And you can tell with, you know, and it's the same thing with Ahmed Best. Like, Jake Lloyd was a child, and it's a terrible performance. And it was the wrong casting. And, you know, he's better in Jingle All the Way. But with this, like, you feel like you're just watching, and it's like, you know, as soon as you see him, he just doesn't know what he's doing. And he's looking off of the screen to see you know, getting cues and, yeah, and things like that. And you can even see that with Ewan McGregor when he's looking at Jar Jar, his line of vision is looking almost like way too high for what the character needs ends to with the being, eye line. Yeah. Right. And so those things are, you know, noticeable, but then like when you're watching it now as well, it's kind of tipping you off right from the beginning that there's something wrong, because the Viceroy being like stereotypical Asian characters, you know, and the way that they talk, even the Krull like telling you about the, you know, the Trade Federation and, you know, taxation and politics. No child wants to watch this, and even adults would be bored by that. And then once you have,
or
the
you
droids,
gotta get into it like Andor, right? Like you yeah gotta shoot, yeah, anyways,
but then that's a whole different experience. And then the droids, you know, saying Roger Roger, it's like it's starting to tell you that this is, there's something off or there's something wrong about it. And then once you get to Jar Jar, it really feels like, okay, this is like the beginning of the end. But it's also funny that they didn't have the courage of their convictions to keep Jar Jar in the cast as a regular sort of main player in 2 and 3. And
that
somehow
Senator Jar Jar
he becomes a senator and somebody voted for him. But even that is strange, because the whole point of Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, and Obi-Wan is so sassy in this movie, is that they're, you know, they're working with Chancellor Valorum. I vote no confidence in Chancellor Valorum. And they don't really have much of a relationship. So maybe this got cut out of the film, like with Terrence Stamp's Valorum character, they don't really have any
in it, right?
connection to him. And you think that they'd have like a scene together talking about like, oh, did you hear anything, or like make those characters more sort of, you know, in collaboration, and none of that is there. And it just kind of is a traditional action movie going from one location to another and getting, you know, parts in order to move to that and this. And the relationship between Anakin and Padme is so creepy. But there is still,
well, it's funny
because
she's like, it's at that weird age. I'm not defending it at all. I hope this doesn't come across as that. That sounds even bad when I preface it that way. Like, she's not that much older than him. It's just like he's 10 and she's like 15 or 16, right? Like,
yeah,
like,
and he still
that
looks like a baby
child
still,
where she
yeah
looks like a teenager. So I get it. Don't get me wrong. It's just, you know, a 5-6. I'm not defending anything. I'm just saying it looks worse.
Lucas should have done is they should have cast somebody her age.
Yes.
You know,
you don't need him to be a child. He could have also been a teenager.
Like, right? What was like the thinking behind that? It's like, oh yeah, I'm going to have him this much younger, so like she sees him as a child in the next
10-year-olds, right?
Yeah, but like, then you have the relationship.
I guess they think, I don't think Lucas is thinking, not to get too much into like weird grooming shit. It's just like,
but what is Lucas
thinking? They're both kids, right? Like she's still a, you know, and as he's of age, she's in her mid-20s, he's 19 or whatever. Like, I guess. And you don't think of it as like she's an adult and he's a child, so she's grooming him. Like, I don't view it that way, even though it's funny to look at it as like a Padme December or
licorice pizza.
Licorice pizza, yes.
Manhattan. Like
lightsaber pizza. like, so it's stuff like that. I don't necessarily view it. I think the jokes are funny. And I think in the movie, it's funny when you laugh at it, knowing where it goes, right? Like, I think in the movie, I guess he had the story planned out like Padme was always going to be the mother of Luke and Leia and stuff. But spoilers, everyone.
But then did he also have planned out that Luke and Leia were brother and sister with Empire?
Right?
Because that also makes it weird, too.
I don't think he ever did, right? Like, is it?
I think he had a general outline.
But same with Star Wars is in its entire history. I think people have a general idea of what they want to do, then fly at the seat of their pants of just being like, we'll make this shit up as we go.
I'm surprised he never retconned the makeout session between Luke and Leia in Empire.
I don't even if it's like they didn't. I'm not defending it again. I'm just defending. Oh,
Matt loves incest and age inappropriate
Stop.
Relationships.
Don't put that out there. That is horrible. No. I'm just saying, like, the characters didn't know, so it's not that. Like, it's just whatever. It is funny, though. Like, watching, going back to the crowd of laughing at certain things. So like when she's making comments at him, or he's like, "You're an angel," and like everyone's in the theater is like uncomfortably laughing.
Yeah,
it's like it added to the experience a little bit, right? And
or when she puts the blanket on him, and it's like, "It's so cold up here," and it's like,
yeah,
it's like the intimacy of it. It's like, okay, yeah, this is kind of very great. Icky,
because he does look so like he looks like a child. Where she. Yeah. She, Natalie Portman, she was a child actor too, but she was getting closer to being like a late teenager and becoming, yeah. So anyways, we can move off of that.
Let's get back to the racism and anti-Semitism
of
the characters.
Kinda,
and,
yeah.
And I think the creativity just isn't there in the same way. But you do, you know, you're talking about, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean on the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes episode. The other
Please
thing I do appreciate.
Great episode. I want to see that. Go listen to that.
Is that this is shot on film. And, you know, once we get to Attack of the Clones, it's digital and it looks digital. And it does not hold up the same way. Where with Phantom Menace, at least you appreciate that. And they're using some miniatures and the ships and the designs are interesting enough. And, you know, John Williams delivers one of his best scores in this movie, especially with Duel of the Fates. Like there are all these little aspects that kind of help to, you know, make the medicine go down a little bit, or make the sort of that bitter taste a little bit more digestible, because, you know, Jar Jar is terrible. Jake Lloyd is awful in terms of performance, and Anakin as a character. Like, I like the line of Obi-Wan saying, "Oh, or I have a feeling that we've picked up another pathetic life form." And, you know, he's right. Like, it's also funny because like Obi-Wan in that whole sequence when they're on Tatooine is barely in the movie at that point, other than to get the metachlorian count. And he's like, "Oh, this boy's metachlorian count is off the charts."
There's some choices there. The metachlorian stuff, awful, just awful stuff. You know, all the references to like having C-3PO and R2-D2 and stuff like that. Like it, people have said this for a long time about Star Wars, but having everything so connected makes the universe feel smaller than bigger, right? Like having everyone like, "Oh, this was all connected. R2 was here. C-3PO was created by Anakin." And at the time you're like, "How the fuck does that work?" And then they have to like explain that their memories were wiped and shit like that, where you're just like, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, because you understand why they put some, they needed to bring some fan favorite characters from the original movies like into this to, but it just feels too connected at times, and you could see Lucas just trying to be like,
it's fan service.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the problem, where you get a lot of these movies and shows, like the X-Files was known for it as well, and with this in particular, it's like, okay, the person who really suffered the most here was Uncle Owen, because he shouldn't have had to have paid for C-3PO in Episode 4. I mean, you know, his own stepbrother made the fucking thing. Yeah. So like stuff like that. And then there's even weird, like in this rewatch, there's this really odd choice of using handheld as like a POV shot of C-3PO when Anakin's leaving to go with Qui-Gon. Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing about the slave relationship thing, where he frees Anakin and then Qui-Gon later on, it's like, you know, talking to him, and Anakin starts calling him Master Qui-Gon, and it's just like, this kid's been freed to become a slave to a Jedi.
To Jedis, yeah. No. Jabba and Bib Fortuna being there as well. And I know it's all, we haven't left fucking Tatooine. We're 40 years later, but we're still on Tatooine for most of the Star Wars content. But some other people you forget that's there, like Dominic West and Sofia Coppola and Keira Knightley, speaking of pirates, and Sally Hawkins is in it. I didn't even know that.
I didn't even notice.
So anyways, Sebulba, and I mean, I love Watto.
Sebulba was right. Like, yes, the way that he hates both Anakin and Jar Jar, it's like, I get that.
Sebulba was always cool, and I think the pod racing scene does rip. Like, yes, is it way too long and self-indulgent? And that's the other thing with Lucas, is like, you never know. I think we all have what's that syndrome where you forget which thing was the actual I'm talking about like the Berenstain Bears thing where you don't know what was actually real. And I feel like
with the Mandela effect.
Thank you. Of like, you forget because there's been so many like little tweaks to these movies or iterations or special editions. Like, it's unfortunate we didn't get to see the Yoda puppet because it's horrifying.
Oh my God. Movie, right? It's terrible. Like,
it's awful, but they've replaced it with the digital version, which looks fine. It looks good. But I wish we still had the horrible Yoda puppet, right?
You see Yaddle for a moment.
Yeah, Yaddle, they don't focus enough on Yaddle. Like, will we eventually get the thing that Baby Yoda Grogu is Yaddle and Yoda's son?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which means they were getting their fuck on. Again, stereotypes aside, I love this little bastard. Like, I just, he's so, like, gross and like, I just, I love weird little freaks in Star Wars, right? And I like them when they're cute little freaks, and I like them when they're disgusting, you know, this guy right here.
Great close-up of his belly button at one point. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So I can give you guys all that on the video version if you want. The lighting, I got to bring him back here. But Eric got me this for my birthday, I think, Christmas.
And Nevis has been cursing my name ever since.
And I'm one of those people, like, it was in the box, and I was like, I'm ripping this thing out of the box. I'm like, he needs to be freed.
Yeah, free the Watto.
Yeah, just like... You know, the slaves had to be freed from Watto. I had to free Watto. But yeah, like, I had fun watching it with all of you guys. But I don't know. It's one of those, the prequels, I know some people have kind of reevaluated them and kind of like them. But
or Topher Grace's re-edits of them online.
I'd love to see that eventually. But yeah. I still love Star Wars, so I will always watch the prequels, like doing a rewatch. Like, it's never going to be a point where I skip them, even though, like, Attack of the Clones is the one where I'm like, ooh, okay, let's get through this. Like, even Revenge of the Sith, which I know you're not, I know some people actually genuinely like it. I'm kind of in the middle where there are, again, elements I like, but I don't hate it.
It's just, I think it's disappointing because ultimately that's where you're building up to, and it doesn't land in the way that you think, like, oh, this movie's going to make up for the last two films, or we finally get to the landing point of what we've been trying to do this whole time. And this almost seems to be a Star Wars thing now, where Revenge of the Sith and The Rise of Skywalker didn't, you know, hit the landing. And they kind of left fans disappointed to a certain degree when it came to, you know, finding that conclusion and spending so much time with it. And obviously as well, like, I think another thing that we didn't really talk about is that, you know, with the marketing being a big thing, another aspect of it was like online culture at that point was really starting to mutate into what we know as toxic fandom now. And so, like, you were getting the early days of, you know, forums and the online community talking about this, and that was such a big part of it too. So, you know, like, it was I think a pivotal time and a change in time for a lot of things. And so, you know, like, 1999 is known for is known to be a great year in cinema, and sort of a year that introduced us to a lot of filmmakers and had a lot of, you know, movies that kind of changed the way that people thought about things. Like, you know, I think about like something like Being John Malkovich. And so, you know, with that year, like, it being released, like, you think, oh, like, this is going to be one of the better, you know, blockbuster movies. But the film that kind of, you know, stole its thunder a little bit in terms of word of mouth and kind of built a cult was The Matrix, in terms of like science fiction and sort of being groundbreaking and a breakthrough in technology.
Yeah. And The Matrix does hold up. Personally, I rewatched those and, you know, they are dated, but I still very much enjoyed myself, and I didn't not enjoy myself here. So I don't know if I need to watch it for a long time. Like, that's going to be the test, is like, when...
Wait for the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, episode whatever they want to call it, 10, I guess, is the next one. If they call it episode 10, which I assume they will, the Daisy Ridley, you know, sequel from Charmaine Obaid Shinroy and Stephen Knight. I'm curious, like, what's going to be the difference in years? When did Rise of Skywalker come out? Or not Rise.
Oh, Force Awakens?
No. I guess the last one. Yeah, was it Rise of Skywalker?
Rise of Skywalker, yeah.
It came out in 2019. So by the time that movie comes out, it's probably going to be 10 years? No. They haven't started shooting it yet, right?
But, no.
But still. Yeah, I don't know what to expect. Like, Star Wars, we've talked about it at length of, like, you know, it has its ebbs and flows too. And I think now, unfortunately, there's probably more ill-received movies than there are well-received movies, right? So I've liked the majority of them for different reasons. I am still a Star Wars nut. The animation part is the one blind spot I kind of have, like with Bad Batch.
Like with Batch, the Bad Batch.
Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Sith, I think just came out. Or Tales of the, I forget what it's called, that shows you something. But like all the live action stuff, I'm still in. Like I enjoyed The Mandalorian. I think Andor is amazing. So I'm excited for all that. But it really started, like, these prequels, like, as much as those originals, like, those, these are weirdly our Star Wars, because these are the ones that came out in theaters during, you know, our seminal kind of age of, at least for me, falling in love with movies. So this movie has a special place in my heart for that, I think, unfortunately. but yeah, it ultimately, I think, is a disappointing, you know, follow up 16 years later after how amazing all three of those first movies are, right? Like, even Jedi, which people don't like the Ewoks and stuff like that, but
the Ewoks, like, are so much better
than
anything in the prequels,
day, man. And then
we didn't know, like, how good we had it with the Ewoks.
and I think with the sequel trilogy, Force Awakens, we've talked, you know, I thought was a really good, you know, remake of A New Hope, essentially, right? Like, it's just for a new generation. And then I think Last Jedi is genuinely great. And I know that's a hot topic on the internet. And I think when we are 16, 20, 25 years removed from Last Jedi, I hope people start to fucking understand that it was a good movie.
And come back around on it. But could you imagine if something like The Last Jedi was released in 99 or 2000 and the kind of hate that it has gotten over, you know, its release and even now had then, because, like, you know, fans were so, and I'm not exempting myself, because I hated Jar Jar Binks and I didn't like Anakin and I didn't like Jake Lloyd's performance, but we were so cruel to, you know, these people that we forgot that, you know, they're human beings and it's not just like simply they're giving bad performances.
And it's just a
to
fucking movie.
You.
It's just a movie.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? That's the thing. When I don't like something in even a fandom,
but people's
really
lives
love,
revolve around it.
I know, but it shouldn't. Like, I just, like, I love Star Wars. I love Marvel. I love Jurassic Park. Like, those things aren't gonna, like, I'm not gonna get mad when a movie's bad. It's just unfortunate. You're like, I didn't like that. That sucks. Or that was pretty bad. That sucks. It's not like the end of the world. So anyways, I think, like, if you have a chance, it is fun to go see it in a theater. I'm jealous of that. I've saw some people online say that they went and saw it in 4DX.
Oh, God.
And I think
they
that
spray
would have been
sand
fun.
In your face.
Yeah. But that would have been fun. The pod racing sequence and stuff like that. Like, that is a new way to watch this movie. Right. And I think, and this is the second re-release of this movie. They had the 3D re-release, like, not that long ago, right?
And it didn't do well then. And that, the whole plan was to release it, all the Star Wars movies.
Or all of them, right?
All of them in 3D as a converted version. And so,
thank God we won, people. We didn't support 3D.
Yeah. But this is also something I think maybe we can kind of end the conversation on. is that this seems to be the year of the re-release, you know, partly because of the actors' strike and writers' strike halting a lot of productions that are only now. I think
the pandemic leading into that is kind of
what so happened. We don't have as much in terms of newer releases. So if you look at the coming months, like we'll review a lot of, you know, of the films that are coming, but there's not a lot of big films. So you're seeing Spider-Man Mondays, you're seeing, you know, Episode One and The Mummy getting these 25 anniversary edition releases. And, you know, it seems like that's going to be a thing that carries on through maybe even past the summer, just to fill larger multiplexes with something. And a lot of these movies, maybe they won't make a ton of money, but Episode One being number two at the box office,
beating Challengers, didn't it?
Beating Challengers, yeah. And just coming in under The Fall Guy shows you that there's an interest, you know, and maybe it's a time thing, and maybe it's just a way of getting people out of their house to experience it with other people, if it's ironic or not. And so, you know, like you're looking at this year, and I think it really does feel like, you know, studios are needing to capitalize on older properties that they have, because, you know, exhibitors need something to screen in those theaters.
Yeah, you saw they did the Kubrick re-releases here in Canada, at least. And
yeah,
they've done it for a ton of stuff. I haven't gone. It's hard for me. We just talked about it off air in between episodes that I renewed my TIFF membership and that I want to try to get out to see more stuff. I just love seeing things at Lightbox. So that gives me like a reason. And, you know, we'll take shots at Cineplex any day of the week. But that's one of the reasons why I think I haven't gone to many of these, because I'm like, I don't know, going to see Spider-Man at my local Cineplex multiplex. Yeah, the screen's bigger. Debatably, the speakers are better than what I have at home. Debatably, the projection is better than what I have at home, because depending on where you go, like they were just playing them in random theaters. They weren't in AVX for the most part, or IMAX, or we don't have something like Dolby or any of that stuff here. So they were just in a normal, you could be in a normal tiny cinema at your Landmark or Cineplex, right? So like, it's not super enticing to me to go see those unless something like a 4DX or like a reason that makes it different than the quiet, good sound, good, you know, quality on the TV behind me here, like of watching at home. So that's why I haven't really gone out. And even with this, like it looked decent when we saw it, but no masking, right? Cause that's not going to happen anywhere. So that looks bad. And like, I just haven't been enticed to go to many of these re-releases, and that's what I mean. Like if they were in quality cinemas, I would. And to undercut that, I will sandwich that with a compliment. Is recently I've been happy to see that Cineplex is investing in new laser projectors in their AVX theaters. So I do think if you look on their website on anything that says laser projection, those are pretty new. I think they're installing a bunch of new projectors in a lot of their AVX theaters. Those look great. We saw Challengers in there. We saw Planet of the Apes in there. I saw Challengers, sorry, in AVX at Queensway. But like I've been seeing some stuff in AVX lately, and it's a noticeable difference to me where the projector is brighter, the blacks are deeper. And like, so the masking doesn't stand out as much because the projector is projecting the actual image much brighter and then the rest is darker. So it doesn't have that contrast between the gray at the top and bottom of your screen when it's not properly masked. Do I wish it would have been properly masked? Yes. But hot tip, if you're in Toronto, the Yonge and Dundas AVX is a 239 scope screen, so anything that's in 239 will fill up that screen nicely. Anyways, I'm off topic, but that's just why I haven't really gone to see many of these re-releases, and that why seeing it that night was fun with you guys, but I don't necessarily go like, you should go see this in theaters. I don't know, you could watch it at home.
Well, especially if like you're saying with a lot of the Cineplexes, you know, if all theaters were like the Lightbox, or even, you know, Landmark's not perfect by any means either, but you know, the landmark in Whitby, and talking to Matt Finland, who I did an interview with on for the Movie Man, he talked about his landmark also having proper masking. So maybe it is a landmark mandate. I don't know, or the theaters themselves. So it, like those things where it's like, that's what does entice you a little bit to kind of get out of your house, even if you have a great, you know, setup. But it's also, I think it does depend on the movie and maybe your relationship to the film. Like if you have nostalgia for it, maybe if you have kids and you want them to experience it for the first time and you want them to see it in a way that you did when you were a kid, it like all these things kind of play a part of it. Because I didn't have any interest in seeing the 3D version of Phantom Menace, 3D or not 3D, like at that point. But for some reason, and I can't really explain why, I was excited about seeing Phantom Menace again, you know, partly for the shits and giggles, but it felt like it was exciting, you know, to do that and to do that with you and with Kyle and with Kyle's friends. And like, it felt like a bit of an event in a way, where, you know, there are other great movies that are being released right now, like, you know, Aliens 45th anniversary. And obviously that dovetails nicely with Alien Romulus, but there's just something where it's like,
which
okay,
is playing, oh, Aliens or Alien?
Alien. Alien.
Which is playing Lightbox soon. We talked
yes,
about that.
Yes. So. And so like things like that, where you're thinking to yourself, okay, like, well, why am I not having that reaction to want to maybe go and see, you know, something like that in the theater, because it's also playing at Landmark. So, you know, it's just, I think maybe it's time plays a factor in it as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe the idea or the advertising of it being a big year for something, whether it be, you know, 10 or 5, like it just feels like, okay, like when you put that on there, it
the
adds 5 year
something. Anniversaries, I don't buy. A 45th anniversary is bullshit to me.
Like, it is, but that's also marketing for Alien
I know,
Romulus.
And
right?
I get it, but I think you celebrate the tens and the quarters. So 25 yeah. and 75, I think, are fine. Like, I don't 45, 35, get out of here. That's not an anniversary.
Yeah.
It's like 30, 40, 50, 25. I'll give you 25.
It is amazing, though, that Alien is almost 50 years
it's fucking
old.
Nuts, right? I'm yeah. excited. I am going to go to that Lightbox screening of that, because that will be great. Breaking news. John Malkovich has joined the Fantastic Four. So that's cool. Not the team, but he's in the movie.
Speaking like, of know, 25 years ago being John Malkovich, you know, in 1999, so, right?
Happy birthday. He's in the Fantastic Four now. John Malkovich has finally joined the MCU. So,
and long last.
He's Galactus.
Oh, God, that would be funny.
That would be good. All right, I think we're going to wrap here. Are we going to put a score? I'm going to give it a score. I'm going to give Phantom Menace a 2.5 out of 5. I think it's not horrible. It's almost okay. But ultimately, there's just a few really good moments, and the rest is kind of either a slog or borderline offensive. So.
Yeah. It gives you a taste of something better. And that's also what's kind of disappointing about it. It's like when you get those little nibbles of like, oh, this is what could have been. It's ultimately disappointing. I'm going to give it a 3. Honestly, it probably is more of a 2.5
or
2.
You're going 3. Wow.
I'm going 3. Now, here's the reason why I'm going 3. And if I'm looking at the context of it just as a standalone movie, it probably is a 2, 2.5. But in the context of the prequel trilogy, I think it is the best one, partly because it's shot on film, because of John Williams' score, because of the Duel of the Fates sequence. You know, some of the campiness that comes with it now, I don't know if it's on the, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show is a great movie, and I don't want to put that, say Rocky Horror is a bad movie, where this is a bad movie at times, but there is that campiness now where you can laugh at it and kind of enjoy it for what it is. And then also, I think it's just a part of my childhood in some totally. Fucked up way, where like there are all those things as well. But yeah, I do think this is the best of the prequel trilogy. Like it feels the most like a Star Wars film.
Cool. Well, thank you all for listening or watching. We really do appreciate it. This is a little bit different than what we usually do. We usually review, I guess it's technically a new release because it is a re-release, but we review new films usually. I love doing this though, so maybe we'll sprinkle in an old movie here and there when Eric and I do get out to the
cinema. If we see Alien, maybe we'll talk about the experience at Lightbox.
Anything we go to the cinema to go see, I think is fair game to talk about. I mean, even stuff we watch at home, like Pirates of the Caribbean and other things. But we have a review out for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which I would love for you guys to check out. Very fun conversation, both about the movie and just other Disney park movies and things like that. And Eric also has a interview with both Kevin Durand and Owen Teague from Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which you can check out both of those things on all podcast services and on YouTube at Untitled Movie Podcast, or on our Letterboxd, which is Untitled_movies. And you can follow me on all of those social medias at Matt Rohrbeck.
And I'm Eric March, and you can find more of my video reviews on RogersTV.com/cinemascene and on all the social medias at EM6211.
Until next time.
That's Wizard Annie. Yippee!
Now this is pod racing.
Win the race, of course.